it really comes down to the content. Like the content is what's more important than the appearance. And, you know, I think after you kind of get going, you can always come back and refine the appearance. And then maybe you decide you want to invest more in making it look more professional or more high end or whatever look you're going for. But I think in the beginning, the most important part is the results you can get people and the content that's included in your product.
Welcome to Michelle is Money Hungry. I'm your host, Michelle Jackson, and today we are having one of my brand building conversations with a friend of mine who is just killing it. I love what she's doing. I love her course. And she's just good people. She lives in my neighbor state, so I love that about her too. And I think that you'll get a lot out of this conversation. This episode is sponsored by 10KVA. For those of you looking to become a virtual assistant and actually make money and not have to live on rice and beans, even though rice and beans are delicious, definitely check out the 10KVA. There will be a link in the show notes. You'll be able to go to the show notes at michelleismoneyhungry.com/Kayla Talks. Hey, Kayla, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you, Michelle?
I am fantastic. Right before we got on here, I was like, it's been cold. And today it's actually a beautiful day. I just got back from the Apple store, got my laptop taken care of for free. So now I'm ready to like have this conversation with you and pick your brain in all the ways that people want to pick your brain, but you know, it costs money to do that. So you guys listen up. You're really lucky to kind of get to hear what she has to say about what we're going to talk about today. Kayla, if you could introduce yourself, because people are like, I don't know who Kayla is because you haven't really said, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I can definitely do that. So hello, I'm Kayla Sloan. I am the go-to virtual assistant and outsourcing expert for the online personal finance community, which is how Michelle and I actually met. So I have worked with dozens of online business owners, mostly in the personal finance space, to help them grow and scale their businesses.
And I was telling her that I could tell how well-trained her virtual assistants are based on just my interactions with the emails and things as we were organizing this conversation. And I've met other people who've gone through her course or have worked with her virtual assistants, and they love, 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 love them. So anyway, I had a ton of questions that I wanted to ask, and you very kindly said yes to a brand building conversation. So we're going to get into it. So the first thing I'd love to know is just how on earth did you get into VA work? Like, how did this become a thing for you?
I'm going to try and keep the answer short because I could probably talk about this all day. but the short answer is I found myself in a tight financial spot. I was in a ton of debt. And that's how I discovered the personal finance community. And I just kind of started out as a blog reader. And I noticed all these people talking about how they were making money online through their blogs or through freelance services such as writing or being a virtual assistant. And I was like, okay, first of all, that sounds like a scam. but second of all, if it is real, then I need to know the goods. So I reached out to a couple of bloggers that I had been following online for a few months and just was like, okay, can you tell me about this? Like, is this actually legit or, you know, am I going to get scammed? And they were like, no, it's legit. And so I started virtual assisting for one of those bloggers that I had reached out to actually. And after working with her, I was like, okay, this actually is legit. And I'm really, really good at it. Like, I love organizing things. I love helping people. And so it really just kind of grew from there. And I put myself out there more and more in that space and in that community and really got to be known within the personal finance space specifically, since that's where I got started. Yeah, that's kind of the short story, quick and dirty version, but it did take a lot of time and hard work to get there for sure.
What kind of stuff were you doing? So for the person who's like, well, you know, I'm a stay-at-home mom, or I would love to make some extra money, and this sounds intriguing to me. First of all, what were some of the skills you used to even help these entrepreneurs? And then how did that work virtually? Do you know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of people are still trying to figure out how a virtual assistant works versus meeting someone one-on-one in person. So kind of talk about that.
Yeah, for sure. So when I started out, I, as I mentioned, had no idea what a virtual assistant even was. And so I think that that's still kind of a common thing, even a few years later here, is a lot of people are like, what is a virtual assistant? What is that? And what do you do all day? And the great thing about being a virtual assistant is that it actually encompasses a lot of things, which means you can utilize a lot of different types of skills that you've learned along the way in your life to build a virtual assistant business. But the downside of that is, again, when people ask what a virtual assistant is, you're kind of like, it's sort of hard to explain because there are so many things you can do. But some of the really common ones, I think, for beginners are things like email management, social media management, and even just doing things like calendar management, making sure everything's put in the business owner's schedule that they need to know about, deadlines that are upcoming, just kind of overall keeping the business organized and making the life of the business owner a little bit easier, I think, is a great way to kind of get your foot in the door and get started. So it's just like being an administrative assistant in person, except you're doing it online virtually through email, through online tools, things like that.
So you've got this course, 10K VA, and that's a nod to the fact that you've been able to really make a lot of money. In your course, the 10K VA, you teach people how to become virtual assistants. I'm wondering, in that course, do you also share some of the tools that you would use to help organize an entrepreneur who has no idea what tools they need to be organized in order to like work with an administrative assistant? Do you know what I mean? Like, if I'm taking your course and I have no idea what tools I need to be using to help my client, do you provide those in the course?
So there is a section of the course all about how to run your business as a virtual assistant, and you can use those same tools with your clients. And so we do go into all of that in the 10K VA course. However, because we all know that the online world is changing all the time, tools are changing, things like that, there's not like an in-depth like video screen share showing things specifically inside of each individual tool. But after hearing from a lot of students that they still felt that would be really helpful, I've actually just recently, last week, started a group coaching program specifically about that, well, where we will cover different types of topics, skills, tools, every single month in a small group environment.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay. Because I've been wondering that. I'm like, what if I could be like a rock star at this, but I have no idea the tools that I need to use. So listeners, just so you know, will you provide that information in case they want to check that out?
Yeah, absolutely. I can shoot you over some information about that, Michelle, and then that way you can put it in the show notes.
So one of the things that I'm really intrigued by, besides you just growing your business, is you deciding to create a course. And the brand building conversations are very specific in that I want to give insight into how entrepreneurs are deciding on the products that they create and why they create those products. It could be that it's a course. It could be that it's a website. It could be that it's a YouTube channel or all three or what have you. So I'm wondering, what made you decide to create a course to kind of build your brand, basically? Because you were well known for what you were doing. And then building a course, as you know, is a pain in the butt. It takes a lot of work. There's a lot of moving parts. What compelled you to do this, and what have you learned from it? Like, was it a good thing? Was it a good thing that you did?
Yes, it was a great thing that I did. Well, the reason that I decided to create the course is for a few reasons. So as you mentioned, I was working as a virtual assistant. I was making a good living doing that, like a very consistent income every single month as a virtual assistant working with business owners. But I realized that I could only help so many people with that type of a business. And I had more and more business owners coming to me wanting to hire me. And I also had people on the other side asking me how they could start a virtual assistant business. And I was like, okay, there's an opportunity here where I could teach people and train people about how to be a kick-ass virtual assistant. And then I could connect business owners to those VAs, and it would just be a really great relationship for them, because there's no way that I can personally work with every business owner that was approaching me. Mm-hmm. And I also was just all the time meeting with people, giving out advice about how to get started. But I was like, I'm just not, even in those individual conversations, I was like, I'm still not able to provide them all the support and help that they need to really get started successfully. You know, it was like a quick coffee chat or something. And it's like, that's just not enough for them to actually really get going. So I wanted to provide them with better support and more information, and then also be able to connect them to the business owners I had really built strong connections with. So
I like that you're talking about recognizing an opportunity. I think that a lot of times would-be entrepreneurs are very nervous about recognizing opportunities. Like perhaps they're asked the same question over and over again about what they're doing, about something that they've had a lot of success about, but they're resistant to the idea of creating a book, starting a podcast, creating a toolkit, that kind of thing. Were you fearful about creating that course? If you were, what helped you work through that? If you weren't, why was that?
I wouldn't say I was like nervous or scared really, as much as I was just like, I put it off for quite a while after I initially thought of the idea and had been asked several times, and actually had people suggest to me like, why don't you create a training program for virtual assistants? And I'm like, because I, at that point, had pretty much given all of my time to my client work. Mm. And so it was a risk for me to pull back on client work to have time to create the course. And so that did mean taking a risk and having kind of a dip in revenue during that time period, which was kind of scary. But the reason I kind of got over it is after talking to a few other business owners who kind of went down that same path, just being forward thinking enough to realize that the short-term dip in revenue during the time I was creating the course would actually pay off a lot more in the long run.
Let's dive a little deeper into your experience as a course creator and its role in your business, in particular the revenue stream. So I think that a lot of times when people, especially people doing digital businesses, that might be for entrepreneurs who are providing service-oriented, online entrepreneurs who provide services. So for example, in your case, you were doing things specifically for people. It wasn't like you sent a book out to them. You literally had to manage tasks for people. What has it been like building a revenue stream that's passive in nature versus adding new clients? Because I feel like you're at the point where you don't necessarily need to have clients because your course sales are doing really well. Am I right in thinking this?
I still have two clients, but it's mostly so I can still kind of stay connected to the world of virtual assisting and not be so removed from it that I feel like my advice is off. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because the world is changing so quickly that I want to make sure I stay immersed in it, so I know like the latest and greatest of what's happening. Mm-hmm. Because I want to be able to make sure I can still continue to serve my students in the course. So I do still have a couple of freelance virtual assistant clients. But other than that, I have removed myself from client work a lot and really just leaned into the course, doing some marketing for that and continuing to serve my students while also creating additional products. Like I just mentioned, the monthly group coaching program. But that was a hard transition, I will say. It's one that I really started focusing on in January 2018.
And oh, wow.
A year and a half later, and I've gone from 100% of my revenue being from clients to, you know, 80% of my revenue being from my own products and from my website.
How does that feel?
It feels amazing. I actually implemented summer hours this year, so I'm not working on Fridays, which is amazing.
It's funny that you talk about summer hours. I'm really hardcore now about I don't do anything on the weekends. Typically Friday, I wouldn't want to do anything as well, just because normally here we're going up into the mountains or doing like some hiking. Like usually I'm going to hike or something. I'm not around on Friday. And if I'm doing work on Friday, I'm not around for other people usually. So recently I have someone who I'm doing an interview with. Their availability is one of the days is Fridays. And I'm like, sister, why? Why? So So I have an exception to my rule where I'm going to interview this amazing person on Friday, but I'm going to tease her and be like, why do you have this day as your a day that you're available? Because usually, you know, that's a good day to be off.
Exactly.
So how does it feel to have your Fridays off?
It's amazing. I just started 2 weeks ago, so I've had two Fridays off now. Ooh. And so far they've been phenomenal. I've like went and taken a yoga class in the middle of the day. I go run some errands while all those other suckers are at work. It's great.
What is a day in the life like for you? So what exactly do your days look like?
That's a great question. It's a great question. One thing I really love about being my own boss is that not every day looks the same, but it does make questions like this kind of hard. But I love variety. And so having variety in my schedule is amazing. But in general, I usually try to get up around 7, take some time for myself in the morning and start working around 9. I may have some coaching calls with students, or I may meet up with affiliate partners like you, Michelle, and do interviews or do video, you know, different video things. And then I'll work on either product creation or marketing for my existing products as well.
How did you grow your course so that you saw steady income coming in monthly?
So I actually created a evergreen on-demand webinar funnel to promote the course.
For people who are listening, who are like, what's a funnel and evergreen and webinar? Like break it down. Like, I know what you mean, but
right.
Break it down.
Right. Okay. So I have a free on-demand web class that people can sign up for with their name and email address. And in that web class, I talk about how I was able to go from living a paycheck to paycheck lifestyle to earning $10,000 per month every single month, like very consistently as a virtual assistant. And I share some of those like basic, I guess I would say, tips for how to get started doing the same thing in your own life, if that's something you're interested in. And then at the end of that web class, I then tell them and give them an offer for my course to help them get there faster, because I do believe anyone can do it, even if they don't purchase my course. But I just know that like having the advice of someone who's done it also is going to get you there faster. So I have an offer at the end of that web class. And then if they decide not to purchase, of course, there is a follow-up email sequence that goes out to them, also talking about testimonials from my students, what success has looked like for them, and then again, you know, offering them the course. So,
when you say that you have this evergreen funnel, I'm assuming that maybe you're doing Facebook ads, or say, for example, you're a person who doesn't have a huge budget for marketing. Mm-hmm. What would you advise? So one, talk about kind of how you're doing it, and then thoughts about what people could do if they have a smaller budget.
Sure. So I actually have no ads running to this webinar funnel.
Oh.
Yeah. I tried to have ads running to the funnel, but I was unsuccessful in getting them approved just because Facebook has gotten a lot more stringent in what they'll allow. So I'm working on an additional evergreen funnel that will be fueled by Facebook ads and other social media ads, but this one actually is all from organic traffic. I just have an opt-in form on my homepage and my website,
what?
And I get about 40 signups a day.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
So is it traffic to a specific blog post, or is it just general traffic to your website?
So the opt-in form is on every page. Mm-hmm. However, the pages that get the most traffic are a couple of topic-specific blog posts that are getting good organic search traffic.
Listeners, right now I'm geeked the hell out about this answer. I'm so glad that I'm nosy and asking these questions, because I think that there are a lot of people who are, one, a little overwhelmed by the idea of marketing their courses or trying to figure out how they can get their products in front of people. They might not have a lot of money to do it, or maybe they have money, but they're a little leery about investing cash. Maybe they're paying off debt. Who knows what's going on? The fact that you are getting signups based on people coming to your website is, I almost feel like weirdly enough, I'm having a mind blown moment because I'm assuming that a lot of the content that they're engaging with is very specific to virtual assisting and topics that are peripheral to that. So that's something I think listeners might want to consider and think about as they develop products is you can create really helpful tools and resources on your own website and not wait for someone else to get your stuff out there. And by wait for someone else, that Facebook ads, Kayla doesn't use them. I think I'm a little verklempt right now. I'm like, oh my God, really?
Yeah. What? You know, and if you are still in that beginning of stage and you don't even have a product yet, maybe take a look and see what your top traffic posts and content on your website already is. And maybe you create a product specifically around that topic because people are already interested in it.
Did you ever have imposter syndrome?
Yes. I did. And you know what? I think I still do occasionally. I think it's something we all struggle with at different times. I think the key is just to recognize that you're not the only one who feels that way and then come to terms with just, you know, I'm just going to be me and I'm just going to be who I am. And if people have a problem with that, that's okay because there's plenty of other people out there who like me, you know?
And how did you build confidence in your product?
In the beginning, that was probably the most difficult thing was I knew that I know what I'm talking about because I've been successful, but I didn't have any success stories to share yet. Mm-hmm. So before I even finished creating the product, I actually started pre-selling it with individual coaching included. And so I worked through basically the entire course content on an individual basis with my coaching students so that I could use those success stories to improve the course, to fuel the marketing, and also to feel more confident about what I was selling.
Okay, question. How did you pre-sell this freaking course? By the way, listeners, Kayla's course is one of my best performing affiliates. So I'm an affiliate of her course. I'm a huge fan. I know that she gets results, but I'm an affiliate for different products and courses out there. And consistently, Kayla's course gets a lot of traffic, just clicks on the link, people interested in the course and conversions. So it's one of those courses that I think really hits on an interest and a need out there that people are really intrigued and excited about it. So I am curious, how did you decide to pre-sell it? And what was your thought process? Like, did you go to someone else and say, hey, you know, I've got this thing and I'm going to pre-sell it. Like, did you talk to other course creators? I'm trying to go down the rabbit hole with you. Like, how did this work?
Yeah, for sure. So basically the first thing I did was sit down and outline the content. And I did that by trying to take myself back to when I was brand new, what questions did I have and what did I need help with? Mm. And then I actually talked to my virtual assistant and said, hey, is anything missing? Because I was her first client and she was still very new at that time. And so her feedback was actually invaluable in helping create the course and the direction of the course. Mm. And then after I had an outline, I actually used that to go ahead and create the sales page. And I started accepting payments before I'd even made any of the content, which sounds a little risky. I knew I was going to deliver it, right? Like, it wasn't one of those where I'm going to like take people's money and then never give them what they, you know, paid for. Mm-hmm. So I started accepting payments. And the reason I did that is number one, I also wanted to make sure that there really was demand for the course before I put in hundreds of hours creating it. And then number two, I did a special for those people who did decide to pre-buy the course. And as I created the content, I also ran it live with them to see what other questions and feedback they had so I could incorporate that into the content when I actually put it into the course platform.
I want to get more into this pre-sell thing because I'm trying to figure out, did you do like a webinar? Like, how did they know that you were selling a course? Did you reach out to people individually? What did that look like?
I mentioned it in a few of my blog posts at that time because I wasn't writing just evergreen content. Like, I was still doing like income reports showing my virtual assistant business income. Mm-hmm. I also talked about it on social media and I did send out a few email blasts, but I did not do any solid marketing because I didn't know what I was doing back then.
I actually love that you didn't know what you were doing, but you did it anyway. One of the reasons why I am doing this series of interviews is because I think that a lot of people get caught up in how beautiful something needs to be and how perfect something needs to be. And a lot of times you just have to start. I've created a toolkit called Do It Ugly. And the toolkit, which you guys can get in the show notes, so definitely check that out. The toolkit is really a guide to how you can do a podcast, how you can start a podcast, blog, course, write a book, or create an event quick and dirty, right? And basically, it's my experience with those five things and how I did it without spending a lot of money and just... The reason why I say do it ugly is I think a lot of people outthink their action or outthink taking action because they're like, well, I need to have this beautiful video. I need to have like this incredible cover for my future book, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, I've made thousands on books and I paid $15 for each cover.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like no one's sat there and been like, oh my God, I hate your covers. In fact, for the next book that I'm releasing, someone's like, we really love your covers. The guy on it is really hot for that one though. But my point is I spent $15.
Right.
You know, and could you talk about doing it ugly and just like going with your gut and going with your instinct that you've got something that will serve people well?
Right. I think for me, it comes down to that like 80-20 thing, which, you know, people talk about all the time is like, not everything we're doing is important. And sometimes to me, like it really comes down to the content, like the content is what's more important than the appearance. And, you know, I think after you kind of get going, you can always come back and refine the appearance. And then maybe you decide you want to invest more in making it look more professional or more high end or whatever look you're going for. But I think in the beginning, the most important part is the results you can get people and the content that's included in your product. And I've seen business owners, former clients of mine, get so focused on the appearance and the look of things and spend thousands and thousands of dollars on that piece of it. And then they kind of forget about the actual content and the meat of the product isn't as strong as it could be because they were so focused on the external appearance.
What advice would you give to someone who's listening today, who's got something that they think they could share with other people that could change other people's lives, but also change their life and also grow their income?
I would say if you're thinking about it, there's a reason that it's already on your mind, and if nothing else, it's worth a test because even if it fails, it's not really a failure because you learned from it. And then you can always go back to the drawing board and either refine it or start from scratch and do something completely different. But either way, like you're still learning, you're still growing, you're still developing what is going to come next in your business. And so just do it. That's what I tell people all the time. Even the people in my course, they're like, oh, I'm nervous. I'm scared about doing this. I'm like, you just have to do it. Like if you don't do it, you'll never know if it works or doesn't work.
Question. Did you have like a gigantic email list, by the way, when you first started selling your course, or was it like, what do you think about your email list? Because people always say the money's in your list. For those people who are brand new and this is all new and they're hustling and they might not have a big list. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I was told by fellow bloggers and course creators that I should have a huge list before I launched the course. And that's part of what held me back from doing it too. But then I decided, oh my gosh, it's going to take me forever to get a huge list. So I guess I'm just going to do it anyways. And my list was probably 900 people at the time that I launched the course. Even now, my list is under 5,000 because I clean it regularly and that's who's active.
Ah, okay. And by cleaning it, everyone, she just like people who aren't really opening the emails and stuff, she gets rid of them. And the reason why is we have to pay to maintain these lists. So you don't want people on the list that you have to pay that you're paying for if they're not going to engage in some sort of way.
Yeah. And some of those email tools are expensive. So I don't want to pay for people that are not opening.
What is one free resource that helped you along the way that you recommend?
Oh, that's a really good question, Michelle. I think the best free resource I found was actually people. just going up to people and asking them to share their experience with creating their product and what their story is. And I think if you do it in a way that's genuine and like you really want to know, and it's, you don't want to do it just to profit yourself, but also like to hear their story and having curiosity in that, you can learn a lot from people.
So everyone, that is today's brand building conversation. Kayla, thank you for taking time out of your busy day, especially since you work Monday through Thursday now. I appreciate you sharing your wisdom, your insight, letting me like really pick your brain about some of the things that I've been wondering about for a while. You surprised me with several of your answers, which I love. And if people were interested in reaching out to you or connecting with you, we will actually have information on 10KVA in the show notes. But if they wanted to follow you on your social media feeds, that kind of thing, where can they find you?
On all of the social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, on all of those, I am at Kayla R. Sloan. And my website is just kaylasloan.com. So you can find me on both of those.
And actually, I have one last question. So everything you have right now is branded your name. What made you do that? Because you had a different, your website was completely different. And like in my case, it's very difficult actually to have Michelle Jackson as the URL because there's like 8 billion Michelle Jacksons. So could you talk about how you created a cohesive brand over time? Because I've watched you do this. And yes. Why it was important that you did that.
Yeah. So I started out with a very non-professional, I would say, brand. But again, according to our conversation earlier, that wasn't my main concern. Like my main concern wasn't always appearance. It was, you know, the content and the meat of it. But over time, I did want to portray a more professional image. And also I wanted it to be more personal. And I thought that my previous brand name, I just really didn't feel connected to it anymore. I felt like I'd really outgrown it. And I decided that if it was like, if my brand was me and I am my brand, then I'm not going to outgrow my brand and my brand can grow with me because it's me.
Fair enough. and was it hard for you to make that change?
From a technical aspect and design aspect, that took a lot longer than I thought it did, but than I thought it would. But I worked with a really talented team and it went pretty smoothly. So I guess just my advice, if you're going to rebrand and all of that, is it's probably going to take longer than you thought, but you'll be so glad when it's done.
It definitely takes longer than people think if they're rebranding. It surprised me actually how long it took. And I'm thinking about rebranding in about another year or so, but I cannot get my own domain because guess how much it costs for michellejackson.com? $19,888. So I will not be doing that.
michellejackson.co.
Woo, that is expensive. And on that note, how can we hang out with you? Oh, actually, we already said that. So anyway, thank you, Kayla, so much for hanging out with me. I think people are going to get so much value out of this conversation. Hopefully we'll get some new students as well for you. And I just wish you all the best. I love what you're doing. I love following what you're doing. You're an inspiration and I appreciate you.